momenten der Not eigentlich wusste man dann eher weiter vor. Ladies and gentlemen, as I've indicated that we are running short of time, I don't think it will really be appropriate to call for comments or questions. I think we must just move forward. And as I've indicated in the beginning that our chairperson will join us later, she has now arrived. And as this was not a coup, I was just a standing in chair. So I think I should now hand the reins to her to steer this thing forward. Congress chairperson, can you come forward?
I thought you would take us through up to maybe tea time, continue up to tea time, and then after tea, and then I'll take over. I'm not interested in running off anything. I think I'm doing well. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much, sir. I think this chair would now be more nicer than ever before. Maybe I'll just think of without any waste of time, I will then call upon the... Okay, yes, ma'am.
I thought, Chair, it would be fair. This is a workshop. And I think we call this workshop precisely because we want to get to understand what is happening in the department. I think it will only be fair if maybe we can allow those that have got comments on the minister's input. Because if we move forward, you might have forgot about it. I think it is only fair. I can understand the issue of time, but I think a workshop is meant precisely for that.
This is the view of all the members.
Thank you, sir. As I have said that you are the chair, you can run the meeting the way you want, but I agree with the member that there is a lot of issues that have been raised by the minister. Unfortunately, as you are aware, that I only came in when the minister was on the platform, but some of the issues that the minister raised, you know as much as I know that you do have questions on those issues. So I also plead with you, chair, that this is a workshop, let us give members time to ask questions and clarify on some of the issues that have been raised by the minister. Thank you, chair.
I think I will allow questions and comments, but I'll request members to really be very short. Let us not give speeches. Thank you. Honorable Manana, Kosana Vienna, and the other congregation in that order.
Thank you very much, sir. I promise I won't give a speech at all. I will just stick to the comments. I think I just want to say in one of the sessions that we had when we were listening from the different water boards, especially on the second day, I think there are some, you know, areas there that were sort of crossing between this ministry and that of local government. And one of the recommendations that we made, and I think it is important that we raised in the presence of the minister, that at some point there will be a need of actually both maybe the ministers, both the local, you know, I would still call it local government. Sorry, you know, these new names, they're not still confusing. Between the Minister of Local Government and this minister and the two portfolio committees, because I thought those issues were very crucial in terms of, you know, being resolved, because this portfolio committee alone cannot be able to deal with, especially when it comes to issues of the municipalities and minister. Because it came from number of the water boards. That's the first, you know, comment for me. The second one is, I'm just looking at maybe it would have been good if we can receive the entire organogram of the structure of the department, because one can see that there's quite a number of different structures within the department. And for me, I'm sitting here, you know, trying to grapple to say that you know, when the structure is this populated, we are talking about delivery here, Chairperson. We are saying that in the next 5 years, we want to be able to see the change in life of so many people, especially in the rural areas where there is no water. And if you are looking at the structure of the department, one is seeing a very populated structure. I think one does want to say, maybe the minister does need to sit and look at this structure more in depth and say, because, you know, there's sort of a lot of bureaucracy that I'm seeing in that structure, and I'm sitting and asking myself, when will the people in Grandani, in Mumma, for instance, and in Tata be able to receive the water? I'm looking at the presentation that was made here you know, by the department. I'm looking at layers and layers of structures that all have got authority to do this and that. And for me, it is easy, therefore, for one of the structures when it's failing to implement its own role to hide behind, you know, others because the structure is too populated. I'm just saying maybe the minister just needs to sit, you know, with the department, given that they've got two DGs, so that we can just get the full organogram and be able to know what exactly who is doing what. And because for me, a department like this one, you need to have people that are actually going to be sort of deployed into different provinces in terms of these issues that we're listening from the water board, so that we can have people that are assigned, that these ones are going to be working in that area, those ones are going to be working in that particular area to deal with the problems that so far we've received. Otherwise, again, these problems are not going to vanish into the structure and never be, you know, sort of addressed, and will continue coming here addressing the same you know, issues. So I think there's a need of the protein in the structure because I see it too populated. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you. Chairperson, I'll comment about two things here after the minister has made an input in this workshop. The technical skills. I should think, minister, it is the time for this department and your office to assist in developing the technical skills to the municipalities. Because it's the area that we lack most. That's why they are failing to deliver at some stages. And the responsibilities, I'm not sure whether some local authorities does know their responsibilities or not. In terms of delivery board, we'll find that when they are raising a problem in some area in connection with the shortage of water, pointing the national department. When you come to the national department, we are saying they have got the responsibility to deliver those services. So I think we need to assist in that regard. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. From the minister's speech or input, I would like to give us clarity with regard to the fisheries. Because we have the Department of Agriculture and Forestry, which talks about the oceans and the fishes. And then we have got the Department of Water and Environmental Affairs that talks about fisheries, to where we have fisheries in the dams and the rivers. So I would like her to explain to us as to where and when do we draw the line between the fisheries in the marine and the fisheries in the dams and rivers. Since as we focus on water, we know that the dams and the rivers can be, they are the resources for water. Dams and rivers can be infected by things like cholera, and I think that's where we come in. So I don't know, it's a little bit dense.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Minister, for your comments. In going through that presentation, it becomes clear over and over again how massive the area of responsibility you have. Arguably more than almost every other minister in South Africa in terms of what you're responsible for. So it is very, very big. Two things though. I think, and you kind of know my views on both of them, but I would appreciate a bit more engagement on it. The one is, I've sat on the environment portfolio for 5 years now, and I can say that almost everything in the kind of environment cluster is very well run, efficient, from my point of view at least. The outcomes are there. But it remains a problem on an ongoing basis that our management of marine resources is not getting better, it's getting worse. And I have a perfectly good relationship with Dr. Maikiso, so this certainly isn't a go at him. But I'm more worried about whether, in fact, the structures that exist are the appropriate structures. And I particularly respond to commenting here on our inability to effectively stem the poaching of marine resources. And the loss of income to the state, which is lost income in terms of income we can tax and use for good things thereafter, and also what's happening to the sustainability of these resources, the fact that many of these fisheries are not going to provide a sustainable income to coastal communities and periods going forward. So I appreciate any more comments you may have, or any ideas or initiatives that you even might be contemplating, because I think a lot of these functions are not being performed. I think the research capacity is weaker than ever before. There's a lot of skills going out of that organisation, and there's an inability to enforce the actual coastline. You've got these wonderful big boats, which are quite good at deep sea stuff, but not very good at the inshore. That's the first thing. And the second point is, I mean, yesterday or this last week, the Red Garter list came out again, which showed, pointed to a massive worsening of the situation with regards to endangered and threatened and vulnerable species in South Africa. And whenever I see data like that, I always go, well, you know, how does the government respond to this? The typical thing, it really is the cross-cutting response of government to that kind of stuff. And therefore, I always come back to where and how are we going to deal with the National Strategy on Sustainable Development, which has been on the agenda of this department for a long time. It's gone to Cabinet. And I'd appreciate your thoughts and guidance on that issue, because we talk about environment here, and I've said how massive the portfolio is for you to manage. But one of the critical parts of this portfolio is that it surely cannot be your responsibility to manage everything in the environment. It's actually the responsibility of DTI and transport. All of them have environmental mandates. And the coordinating abilities of the state are probably, I'll put you, not good enough to ensure that the kind of true sustainable development we aim for is happening. What, therefore, are your thoughts on that? And if and when can we get the sustainable development initiative going? And particularly, and I said it to you in the budget debate, is this not something that would be suitable to align with Minister Manuel's work from a kind of in the presidency overarching view of the various cabinet ministers? Thank you.
I think in the beginning I've requested members to introduce themselves before speaking, and none of the members so far have done so. So can we really make sure that this honorable invitees know who you are? Hotel?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I'm Luyenge, but the actual name is Zugile. I'm a member of the ANC Parliament and this Portfolio Committee. Chair, I'll try to be very short. Let me first appreciate the notion that we are here. I'm sure it's for the first and the last time that you see a Portfolio Committee with the DGs, the the minister for an important thing like provision of water. It's a rare. It's not that other people don't want it to happen, but I'm saying heads off to our chairperson for ensuring that we are here. And chairperson, you nearly disadvantaged us. You know, when the minister says, I'm at your disposal, and then we are thus prevented from accessing the minister, I think it's an opportunity that you will never ever come across. I think let me appreciate the presentation by the minister. It has actually opened up our minds, and we understand issues as we see. And then we are able now to maybe suggest to the minister and cities to say provision of water as paid in the International Water Act of 1998 remain an obligation on the part of the department to ensure that there is accessibility of water. Then the municipalities have a responsibility to ensure that water is provided to the inhabitants. I mean, Chair, we must understand the fact that we took over an already dilapidated infrastructure, and the local authorities won't be in a position to rise to what the constitution requires them to do that. I think this department, minister, as they've already started, this department must ensure that the provision of water is actually done in a manner that is correct. We do not mean, honorable, so you, that we want taps. We don't want taps, we want water. Taps are there, but when there is no water coming out of the tap, then it becomes a problem. And lastly, Chair, I would like to bring to the attention of the minister that seemingly the functions of the board are urban biased. Because by the look of things, the concentration is on urban areas. When you look at rural areas, I don't want to mention again the issue of Mthatha, you have already responded to that. But even in Mthatha, not a single board can come out and say, we are assisting Mthatha in this country. It has been this department and the local authorities at their level. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thanks, Comrade Minister, for the briefing. I just want to emphasize on what was said by Honorable Clark, because the purpose for this workshop, Minister, is to get answers on issues that are not relevant as the portfolio committee. During the presentation or briefing by different boards, there were many issues that were raised by the portfolio committee, especially when it comes to the issue of service delivery. Because I can't remember where the board took a responsibility and said that we are responsible for this. They would always say that local government is responsible for this because the legislation says this and this and that. Now, arising from what was said by them, we discovered that there is a conflict among certain legislation. That was the one that legislates local government and the one that legislates water affairs. And one issue again is maybe we get answers when we get the department, when they will the course of this today. And one issue again, Minister, is the issue of the fishing rights, because I heard you clearly when you said that at the moment you provision the fishing rights within your department unless you haven't been told otherwise. Maybe I should say that because of precisely what you said, I took it upon myself to invite the minister in the presidency, that is Colin Shabai, to come and brief me on this issue. And then I invited members of the study group. because we're very curious to know that who is doing what when it comes to issues of fishing. Because when I met with the chairperson for agriculture, it was very clear from him that we don't have anything to do with fishing. Issues of fishery, marine something, they are doing everything, nothing to do with us. And then as a result of that, we couldn't agree, myself and him. Then we invited Colin to come and assist us. And it was clear from what Colin was saying that indeed the responsibility was heavy given to yourself as the Minister of Agriculture, so that you should come with some sort of an agreement of which part are we supposed to do oversight as this committee. And then he said that they are still waiting for the feedback from yourself. Now, when you say that you haven't been told, by whom? Because the way it was said, members are here, they will tell me if I'm not talking what was said by the minister. And then the question was from the members, what did the president sign for? What is it that the president signed for? And then they said that on that specific one, I'm telling you, it is with the minister. They will have to come back and tell us what is it that they have decided upon. As a result, we did not get a clear understanding of what is happening with that's the thing that was raised by Utake, which I think that we needed to have more clarity on. And otherwise, any other thing that was said by yourself is going to assist us a lot, as you had indicated that we are a new portfolio, and then we need to understand our area of oversight of this portfolio. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Comrade President, Comrade Minister. I think the members will really appreciate the fact that when they instruct you to jump, the only question would ask would be how high. So I really did a very terrible mistake by not allowing them to give you those instructions. I will then give the minister to respond to all these comments and questions and clarifications. Thank you, Honourable Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Just to say to the members, some of the issues that they are raising here, they are actually matters where you are identifying the problems within the system, existing problems, and which I may not have an answer for now. So I will respond to those that I can respond to. But I think it has also been empowering for me because you are sensitizing me to some of the areas that need immediate attention. So that's the first comment that I'm going to make. The issues raised by a member Hilgan Dude, the overlap between a local government as a portfolio, and as well as, well, it extends to the portfolio committee. Well, whenever there is a matter that overlaps between two portfolios, there is always coordination, it's a given. We work together. If we were to come to have a joint session, we can be able to, you can be the two chairs, can facilitate such a meeting, and then we can come and address it. It's really not so much of a problem. Again, I would know what areas they have been identified. We'll be guided by the committees, and then we can, you know, duly come and address the committees as required. The issue of municipalities, and probably municipalities and our relationship as mainly the Department of Water Affairs, because the Department of Environment, the environmental function has got a concurrent function. The water function, much as it does not have a concurrent function, we have extended the department to the region. There are regional offices that are quite closer to municipalities, and they work very closely with the municipalities. they are more accessible than the national. But I want to agree that maybe leading it up to with the point that was raised by yourself, Mr. Liege, yes, about the fact that whatever happens, the back talk with this department when it comes to security of supply of water. Security of supply of clean, potable water. The back talk with us. This is our responsibility. So we have to hold accountable any other person, including local government, if they are not delivering to this mandate. That's our responsibility. But given the problems that you have also cited, I'm responding to both yourself and Hilda on this one. Given the problem that we all appreciate of capacity in local government, we work very closely with local government. I do not know if the memorandum of understanding that the Department of Water Affairs had with SALGA is still, you know, functional, is still alive. Because there was such because we were appreciative of the very concerns that you have. Surely we will have to look at that and strengthen that relationship. But indeed, I agree with you. We need to be hands-on. We can't just leave things to local government. Otherwise, we shall always have problems with water supply and in some cases, things complicate beyond even the capacity that municipality would have. Then surely we have to come in. So we are there. We are in the regions and we do interact as much as we can with local government. On the organogram, the breakaway session that we have, Hilda, what I really wanted to see there, I instructed my officials to look at the organogram because it's a new ministry. And we really needed to understand the mandate of this ministry. And understanding the mandate would then help us, you know, analyze the capacity that we need to implement this mandate. And before we can talk about what is more, what is less, it would be difficult at this stage to say, I don't even think that it's overpopulated. It may be underpopulated. It may be overpopulated in some aspects of it. It may well be that, for instance, climate change is a burning issue. What do I do with climate change? Do I make it a separate issue or a division within a branch? The green scorpions that we are establishing, where do I locate the scorpions? Do I locate them within the MCM or whatever environmental management is there, or do I create a separate, you know, all of those questions we needed to look at. But unfortunately, we did not get to the point of looking at the branches themselves. We just spoke to the rationale behind the establishment of the reconfiguration of this organogram, because really what we have to do is to reconfigure this. I agree with you on that as a principle. And it's only when that process has been completed will come back. I've given them a very tight time frame to complete that process. But it's work in progress, we're dealing with it. Given that it came with the fact that we are creating a new department. So I understand your concern. I've already spoken to us being in regions, and for water, we are extended to regions, but for environment, we are extended to mainland. Mr. Kosan on technical skills, surely I agree with you. It's in the, I've already alluded to that. It's one of the priorities that we have to look at. But what really is important is for us to come up with a strategy of recruiting, a recruitment strategy of these people that we are looking at. I'm not sure if we have enough funding for that, but it's something that we need to do, I agree with you. And maybe it's time for us to approach the universities and recruit from the universities themselves. But also to impress, you know, because the biggest challenge that we have, I'm not sure as to whether there is an age discussion or an appreciation within our tertiary institution on the kind of skills that this economy needs. I don't know if that relationship is there where government would say the South African economy needs this kind of skill, and then in a way influence the intake and the output of tertiary institutions. I think there should be that kind of talk. And for now, I think it's left to individual portfolios, not government. I think there needs to be a stage where, as government, we really inform what goes into tertiary institutions, so that you don't turn out a skill that will not be useful to the economy. I've raised this at some stage in cabinet to say, what will it take in terms of the skills that we produce to make this economy competitive? Because it's about making the economy competitive, and it means then appreciate what kind of skills do you need to make the economy competitive. For instance, we need a lot of IT people in this country. Are we turning enough as much as we need? Are we channeling our children to study towards that? Because then if we don't do that, they will go to university, they will study something else, and they will come back and not get any job, because the economy cannot be able to absorb, is not in need of such a skill. So I'm saying, as much as this is an important issue for us, it is also a broader issue. But for us, we will be interacting with the tertiary institutions in this regard. On clarity with regard to, well, it's both the chair and Ms. Manana. Yes, let me start with what the chairperson said, really. That Minister Thabane said you need to come back to us. It's very strange. It's strange in the sense that in the process of identifying areas of potential conflict and areas of where we need to synergize and align, we sat down with Minister Van Schalkwyk, myself, Minister Van Schalkwyk, and Minister Jumaat. And we agreed, Minister Jumaat made it clear that he doesn't want fishing rights in her portfolio. Made it very, very clear. She said, give me aquaculture, but I don't want fishing rights. Take these things, all of them, your vessels, your everything. I don't want them. But again, they emerged an issue. I do not know where it came from. I don't know why this thing is resurfacing, because I was actually surprised when people went out there in the public and raised this matter. But that is really, for me, not an issue. My understanding of this chair, the management, the marine coastal management, is an environmental function. As to whether you can be able to separate the fishing rights from this function, I really will be guided by the people concerned. But the marine coastal management is an environmental function. And the allocation of rights is about its consumption which cannot come alone. It must come with conservation. So for me, how do you keep that balance if you separate the function? And I'm not arguing my case yet. I'm just stating a fact as it is. Practically, how do you monitor the depletion of the reserve of fish in the water if you're not responsible for dealing with the consumptive aspect of it? So for me, I have been invited to deal with this matter with Minister Jumat and Minister Saran again. And I will avail myself again, and I will give the same explanation. Now, if either you migrate everything to fisheries, or you leave everything to environment, separating it would really be... I don't know if Monde wants to add anything from what I said.
Monde, my people, do you want to add something on that?
Chair, only to agree with the minister that, and based on our understanding of what happened worldwide, that it is always best to have an integrated management of any aspect. Fragmenting management in any way will compromise the management regime. So yes, I'll agree with the minister.
Thank you. That
honorable member there behind the diagonal opposite to, so you can switch off your mic there. Yes, you. Oh, okay. I saw that red light. I thought your mic was on. Okay, thanks, Honorable Minister.
Thank you very much. I think that's how far I can respond to this matter. But surely we will inform you in due course if there are any changes. The last information I had, I have not verified it, was that a proclamation has already been made. The dishes are green. If the proclamation is already made, then the function remains with us. Okay, so maybe that should put this matter to rest. Let's bury it once and for all. Mr. Morgan, again, you are actually highlighting weaknesses within the system. I appreciate your comments on that. When I went to launch Oceans Day, these matters came up, the issue of capacity to monitor the all of what is happening in the sea, the poaching and what have you. The research capacity is also raised as a serious concern, even as it relates to the our project in the Antarctica. It has been raised, and we are going to be working with the Department of Science and Technology, because the R&D resides with that department. But I think what is important is really for us to look for resources for the R&D. As long as there are no resources directed to the R&D, very little will happen. And in the process, we are quite correct. We lose the best. They go back to university. Some people have even left for Australia. So I appreciate the point that you're raising, and we will give it the attention that it deserves. But it doesn't mean that you should not continue to probe on this matter, so that we're all alive to the problem, and we continue to face it. I didn't get your endangered species question.
It wasn't a question in reference.
Okay.
It's an example of why we need sustainable development mechanisms.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I don't know how to respond to this National Strategy for Sustainable Development and its location. I think it's a matter that may be determined by the president. It's really difficult for me. I wouldn't be able to. But probably they have applied their mind to it. And at this point, I must be very honest with you, because I'm running around on issues of climate change. I haven't even looked at the document itself, because I would have a sense of where it should be located. But if it spreads along, I mean, across all sectors, surely its location cannot be with us. But it is a if it is a matter specific to environment, we might have to keep it. But then as to, then we, I would have to again to look at the content. I don't know if the DC wants to speak to that. I would have to look at the content, and then on the basis of what is conveyed there, I would be able to determine as to, I would be able to appreciate what needs to happen. So I apologize for that. I haven't really applied my mind to it as yet. DC, you want to come in?
Minister, you're putting us in a different position that we talk after you. I would think, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, it's a debatable issue, as the Minister is saying, but environmental management in its nature is cross-cutting. And I suspect if you transfer the National Framework for Sustainable Development to the Presidency, chances are all the other functions in the environment, like climate change, because climate change in itself requires coordination across sectors and departments, and that's the responsibility that we currently have in the department. National Framework for Sustainable Development would relate to planning and what issues should be taken into account to ensure sustainability and the balance between economic development priorities of the country, social development priorities, and environmental sustainability considerations. So I would think generally that we are a department of cross-cutting function, unfortunately. So that is a matter that I think would need further thought. At some point, we were also in agreement or in thinking that we needed to have a commission that at a presidential office level to deal with the TIF. The reason why we were calling for that is, I think, in the early days in the department, it was more to make sure that departments are able to comply with the framework. However, if we are going to be able to make them comply with the provisions of mitigation actions and even adaptation actions for climate change, we then still have to enforce that, and if we are able to do it, we should be able to do it in this case also.
And
maybe, Minister, just to add on the other issue that the Honourable Member raised was in relation to the, both in relation to scientific capacity and poaching, that yes, there is real challenges on in terms of our enforcement capacity. But then the issue is the balance between what we can do as this department versus what the criminal justice system is supposed to provide. And that is where the real crux of the matter is. And I think maybe for fairness and also unfairness in being real about the situation, we have data that confirms that we have managed to control some of the species poaching, like hake and pelagic fisheries. However, we have a problem with West Coast rock lobster and abalone, and we also attribute that to issues of accessibility, high value species that you're talking about, and also the large number of participants in those fisheries. So we would have to look even at a resource management strategy that also links to an enforcement strategy in the long term. And those are issues, I think, that are the challenge that we have to grapple with going forward. And in terms of the scientific capacity, in the past, I mean, in the department, we only had a directorate that was responsible for research. At this point in time, at least we have built the capacity. We have a chief directorate
with three directorates that are just dealing with research, and we continue to grow that establishment within the institution, but also, as the Minister was saying, we are also working collaboratively with the Department of Science and Technology. Thanks.
Is there any other follow-up? None.
Yes.
I will then call upon the author of that interest one.
Yes, just this one more thing that was raised by the chairperson in terms of the conflict in legislation. So we would appreciate if you were to identify the researchers yet. You should identify those areas where there's conflict, and of course it's your call to direct us on what we need to do, and we would be quite comfortable to come and explain, or if we need to amend or align, we could look at all of that, but we'll be guided by yourself. Lastly, I just want to say that on climate change, it looks like we're still on course. There was a strong commitment that came from the G8 leaders, G8 5, that the negotiations must continue and an outcome must be arrived at in Copenhagen. Maybe I shouldn't speak to the specifics, but the observation that I made is that we all thought that the G8 is assuming the mandate of the UNFCCC, and yet the G8 was just a meeting of leaders, and what really needed to come out of the G8 was a political statement. And we made the point in South Africa all the time that this is not, it has nothing to do with the process of negotiations per se, but this is a process where, a meeting where the leaders have come out with a statement that will give confidence to the world to say we are still all committed, and to say there is something going on, there's movement. And this is really what we tried to do. I know that people must have heard certain things about the developing countries not agreeing with the proposal of the -80 to -85. We didn't agree because we didn't go there to negotiate and to agree on certain positions. We went there to deal with a declaration, which would be a political statement that would be made on behalf of us by the G8 leaders. So in a nutshell, really, that's the brief report. But maybe if I may go back to the -80 to -95 by 2050, what South Africa is not happy with is that there was no baseline given by the developed countries. They refused to take a baseline. And we were saying, if you are not giving a baseline, then you cannot quantify the emissions. Secondly, how do we ensure that the developed countries honor their commitments? And South Africa was, and the rest of the developing countries within the MEF were saying a mid-term target is very important, so that then this is a package. We agree with the 2050 -80 to -95 on condition that there is a baseline, there is a mid-term target. In a nutshell, that's really what we said there. And this is what the newspapers are saying we rejected. And I don't think that there's a rejection or a non-rejection, because as I said, that was not a negotiating forum. So I think I need to clarify this here. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Minister.
to all the members of the topic.
All the members have the copies of this slide that is going to be presented. Is that permission? CSIR. So start with CSIR. Okay. Overview. I think I've got so many presenters. Okay.
Thank you. I'm normally used to standing when I present, so I'm hoping that the brain will still function in the presentation while sitting down. As you know, the Water Research Commission and the CSIR will be alternating in terms of the presentation. And essentially the mandate that's given to us today is to provide you with an overview of a number of aspects around environment and water, and as such there are quite a few presentations given. To introduce myself, I'm Linda Godfrey. I'm wearing two hats today. We'll present to you an overview of one of the units of the CSIR on behalf of our director, Dr. Pat Manders. And then secondly, a senior researcher and as the manager of our pollution and waste unit, I will present a little later on in terms of the Brown Agenda. So let me move straight in. Not responding to any. Apologies, the computer seems to be a bit slower than me today. Just in terms of providing you with an overview of the CSIR, for those that are not familiar with the organization, essentially the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research, it was constituted by an Act of Parliament in 1945 as a research council. And in terms of being one of the leading scientific and technology research, development and implementation organizations in Africa, our mandate is quite clear in terms of that Act of Parliament. We essentially undertake directed and multidisciplinary research, technological innovation, as well as industrial and scientific development, and importantly to emphasize to improve the quality of life of the country's people. In terms of our mandate with regards to research conducted in other areas, there is some degree of overlap in terms of research done by universities, the tertiary education institutions, and research which is conducted by industry. And you can see that the Science Council typically focus in the middle area in terms of directed research and development. I must also emphasize that the organization receives approximately 30 to 40% of its funding from the Department of Science and Technology. The remainder of its funding is essentially secured through contract research, and some of that research might be directed with other government departments, such as the Department of Water and Environment. The overview of the CSIR, we have a number of operating units. You can see on the left-hand side, they're ranging from biosciences through our built environment, defense, peace, safety, and security, material science and manufacturing, and these units would report to different aspects of government. But to focus specifically in terms of this portfolio committee, our natural resources and the environment operating unit. We've got a number of focus areas within that operating unit. On the right-hand side, you can see six specific key research focus areas, and we're going to be touching on each one of these of relevance today in the presentations that will follow. We've looked at coasts and oceans, and as such I'm pleased that there's agreement that at least we're presenting that in the right forum today. Ecosystems management. Our forestry obviously will report now in terms of the new ministry looking at forestry. Pollution and waste, and importantly resource-based sustainable development and water resources. The Water Research Commission will be presenting mostly in terms of the water issues, so we decided not to duplicate things there, but there is information in terms of your pack in terms of what the CSR is doing in water resource management. Just to touch briefly on the different areas of competence within each one of these, our Coasts and Oceans group, which is based largely in our Stellenbosch office and our Durban office, looks at coastal systems, coupled oceans and atmosphere, coastal and marine pollution, and then marine and freshwater aquatic research laboratory that we have. Our ecosystems group looks at ecosystem processes and dynamics, ecophysiology, biodiversity and ecosystem services, and a new area to the group looks also at earth observation. And then forestry around tree improvement, forest assessment, wood science, and fiber processing. Our pollution and waste looked at waste and society, waste treatment and utilization, and I'll expand on these further in the presentation that I'll give, environmental health, and then also an air quality research laboratory. Our resource-based sustainable development group largely cuts across many of these themes. We look at resource and environmental economics as an alternative policy instrument, sustainable social economic systems, and sustainable technology innovation management. And then water resources, essentially looking at hydro sciences or groundwater, our water resource management that looks at many governance issues around water resource management and transboundary issues, water ecosystems, and water and human health. There are also a number of emerging strategic initiatives that in terms of the research agenda tend to crop up, and as an organization we need to be flexible in responding to these. So these are essentially new areas that have arisen in terms of our research that we're responding to. The first one is around sustainable energy futures, climate change, and then importantly atmospheric modeling. The slides that I've presented to you now on essentially provide an organizational structure for the competencies that we develop in certain areas. But I think, as mentioned already, the environmental issue is an incredibly broad one and incredibly complex one, and it requires of us to merge our skills and to build on skills very much in a transdisciplinary approach. We recognize that to essentially inform environmental decision-making, people and society are based within a natural resource, which is based within an ever-changing global environment. And as such, our research that we conduct is within specific themes that take these competencies and bring them together to hopefully provide a more holistic answer. The first of our themes is around effective resource utilization, which really looks at maximizing these natural resources to support things like economic development, social upliftment, job creation. And you can see the three areas that we focus on there are around forestry, freshwater resources, and ecosystems. Our second theme is around global change, specifically focusing on climate change. And you can see some of the aspects there that we focus in on in terms of evidence-based adaptation and mitigation, improved local and global policy making. I'm not going to go into too much detail. I'm sure Emma will touch on this in her presentation later on. An important one as well is recognizing this interface between the environment and between society. And the two aspects there are around pollution and waste, how our activities impact upon the environment, and then around human health and the environment, the constraints that the environment also places in terms of human health. Then around environmental decision making, two areas, environmental assessment. We've seen, for example, concerns raised around the constraints that people consider environmental impact assessments and strategic environmental assessments to have on development, and the question is how do we support development without necessarily impacting or compromising the environment. And then certainly a new area around energy, sustainable energy options, and again, evidence-based policies, specifically scientific evidence. So in a nutshell, that's an overview of the NRE. and we will be going into a little bit more detail in terms of the various aspects of these in the following on presentations. If there's specific questions around the organisation, perhaps we can take those up at a later note. So, we're going to swap between CSR and the Water Research Commission. So, if the chair doesn't mind, I'm going to pass straight over to the WRC.
I'm calling to our consultant.
I will give a very short, my name is Ruth Clark here, I will give a very short presentation about the Water Research Commission. Our mandate basically, specifically, is for fresh water. So everything that actually has to do with water, as it gets into the ocean, you know, still will be dealt with us. So we will not deal with marine from the point of fishery, we will only deal with freshwater fisheries, for example, if we deal with it from the point of utilization of water. I've been asked also to give an introduction and overview on two issues that relate to water, so I will follow up this presentation with a second presentation about general overview about water issues. Basically, the WRC, from point of our strategic content, deals with the whole water cycle, the hydrological cycle, but it links it to a very important other cycle, which is the knowledge cycle. So what we are trying to put a lot of effort into is actually understanding the needs, but we not only looking at generation of knowledge from point of research and new knowledge and repackaging knowledge, which is also research, but we put a lot of effort into the sharing of the knowledge, its dissemination, its transfer, protection when it's needed, and trying to see that extended knowledge makes an impact. We feel that, you know, throughout the years, water quantity and quality always been critical to South Africa, and we heard it a lot today. But many decades of research, I think, have brought us to today, where we actually have strategy, laws, policy that allow sustainability of the resource, and it's very important to realize that research and development of new knowledge is very important to our future, our sustainability of our limited water resources in South Africa. Now, WRC is mandated as for WRC Act from 1971, last amended for 1996, and probably due for a new cycle of amendments. And it highlights, and this is very old Act, but it highlights the notion of knowledge and the notion of coordinating cooperation and communication in the area of water research, and actually the need to prioritize this and to transfer and enhance knowledge and capacity building within the sector. And that's taken from our act, and we're trying to actually be true to our mandate. Why the role of knowledge is so important, because we believe that knowledge will provide for effective governance from point of policy, strategy and practices. It also very much the base of building competency and skills, what we call capacity or capacity building, but capacity is our skills, but competency is an empty capacity, so it's very important to build the right capacity. It's very important for improved technology, processes and practices, and also for monitoring and doing situation analysis, unless we do that, we don't know where we are. So basically we see that through R&D and knowledge, we can provide technology and policy which will contribute to issues of water scarcity, productivity, and actually combating water poverty. And we're hoping that through the research that is conducted through the support of the WRC, we will make a difference for economic, social health, and environmental issues. So basically the mission of the WRC is to function as a dynamic hub for water-centered knowledge, innovation, and intellectual capital, that's the people, and to provide leadership for research and development through the support of knowledge creation, transfer, and application. And we engage all stakeholders, and we work with many partners in solving this, and at the end of the day, looking at a sustainable resource and sustainable economic growth, and providing and promoting a better quality of life for all in South Africa. Now, one thing that you need to understand is that the Water Research Commission does not conduct research. The Water Research Commission supports and funds research. And that is done through various mechanisms. There is a yearly cycle, there is projects that we commission directly because there are a tremendous need and we need to move capacity, and there are projects that we call non-solicited which create more innovation within the academic sector. We fund all universities, we fund research organizations such as the CSIR, but many others like the Agriculture Research Council, the Geosciences. So we fund very, very widely. Interestingly enough, sometimes we will fund partially or go for projects together with government. Sometimes we will get certain government departments who would like to liberate what we are actually funding. And at the same time, we also go in partnership with some research organizations where they manage to liberate and liberate funds from other sources like the EU scientific funding and so on. Now, what we are talking about is about 100 new projects every year. Every year about 300 projects are funded. Those are multi-year projects. Through those projects, people do PhD and master degrees. And the projects are all, and we have given you some of those examples, they're all public property. We provide for the African public with the research results of those research. So every project will either be what we call a technology transfer report or a research report. In addition to that, every year we finalize about 100 projects. So between the 50 and 100, and you see cumulatively, we can actually show numbers that are close to about 300, 400 projects, you know, that got started in the last 5 years and got finished. Now, the main issue for us is actually to see that we do have the drivers, and I always actually compare it to a tap and a bucket, because if what comes out of the tap is not water, but actually knowledge. If the knowledge is actually coming in drips and pieces, little drips, not on the right flow, then the country cannot move forward, because if you look at the bucket as the overall the absorption of the country from point of knowledge, there is no knowledge, there is no future. At the same time, if we have a bucket that is full of oil and doesn't hold any flow of knowledge, that's not good. So we need to manage the driver and build capacity. And we actually give preference for any research that provides for students. And we actually, if you can see in here, about 3,000 students in the last 5 years have been trained through WRC capacity. But you have heard that we do not have enough capacity in the country. And we have one problem is to try and trace where the students end up. And often they don't end up in the water sector. And we have started now a more closer study to try and figure out where they are and what they do. In addition to the students We also do a lot of other initiatives trying to convince, you know, the youngsters that water is a good career, try to actually provide technical assistance, and we support government as for the Water Information Network of South Africa, which is trying to share learning in local government and support the development of courses and training materials. The WRC runs through four key strategic areas. One is water resource management, where we actually looking at the resource assessment and development, the impact on water resources, water resource protection, policy, and institutional arrangement. And you will hear more about institutional arrangement, you will hear more about climate change that comes through that stream. Water link ecosystem is slightly wider than the ecosystem from point of the aquatic ecosystem, because we will also look at the riparian zone and very unique ecosystem that relate to groundwater. We look at ecosystem processes, ecosystem management and utilization, and ecosystem rehabilitation. And in here we will also look at issues like environmental flow and the need for the river for water in order to sustain the river. And again, you will hear from Stanley Lichalki a little bit long, a while from now about it. The other two key strategic areas are the water use and waste management and water utilization in agriculture. This is about the use of water. And in here, we separate agriculture because agriculture is not only the bigger user of water, but it's a very unique user of water, because it is actually, from point of utilization, very different to others. It uses rented and irrigated water. But anyway, we are looking at food and fiber production, fuel, wood, and timber production, poverty reduction issues, and resource protection. I will talk a little bit more about this important area because it's about 62% of our water that agriculture is using. In water use and waste management, we will look at water services, water supply treatment technology, the old notion of wastewater and effluent treatment, reuse technology, which is very important to our country, industrial and mine management, and the old notion of sanitation, health, and hygiene. It's divided 50% to 50%. So the resource, which is really the water resource management and water link ecosystem, and water utilization and water use, are about 50% from point of funding. We are talking about 120 million a year, and we are talking about 75% of our income actually going into research and knowledge dissemination. As for knowledge dissemination, we put a lot of effort into what we have given you in the bed, our examples of the water wheel, the knowledge review. We have various briefs in which we actually put the research into one or two pages, and the report, and we also take part in many demonstrations and exhibitions in which we try and share the knowledge. We have an element that is about protecting the knowledge, because sometimes some of the major processes used in the world are actually South African inventions. So what we try to do is patent, we try to protect. And this is a very nice example. This is a fantastic capillary ultrafiltration unit that can provide a village or can provide a school with water. And there is an old business model about it. It is licensed to a company called Ikasasa, and we hope that it will go from strength to strength and can solve not only South African water but also African water issues. Talking about Africa, we continue to strengthen our role in supporting of SADC in Africa overall. We work with NEPAD on establishing Center of Excellence for Water Research. It is in the latest stages of development, and we work between the AMCO, which is actually the water minister, who deals with it together with AMCO, which is the science and technology minister. We also involve in Water Research Fund for Southern Africa. It's called WALKSA. Stream of Knowledge Africa, which is training in the field of water supply and sanitation at root level. And we also very much involved in the NPR Academy program for water, which is a global academy program to look at water issues, mainly water resource management issues. And there we are representing the Academy of South Africa from point of the African activity. Just to mention, most of our studies are aimed at having an impact, either through improving our social issues, economic and environmental issues, and we do measure it. So in the last few years, we take group of research projects and we actually scrutinize it to see what impact it has, and those studies are also available to the public. So thank you for your attention. This is the presentation of the WRC. Shall I move to the second presentation? Sorry about this. It doesn't listen. I closed it, it doesn't want to come. The time is up. So that I don't want to listen. Thank you. Okay. This is, in a way, sort of Water 101. So I'm thinking, well, you know, I may be talking to you and you know it all. So just look at it as an overall summary on overall water issues. What I try to do is actually put it in perspective of where is South Africa and where is the rest of the world, and I try and do it in short. I think I don't need to preach to you why water is so important, but it's very clear that oil can be replaced by other energy sources, and we're seeing it in our combating climate change, but there is no replacement for clean drinkable water. Coca-Cola is not a replacement. So we need affordable, sufficient and clean water, which is the most basic humanitarian goal, the Millennium Development Goal. As the minister said, we did meet the goal in South Africa, but we need basically an absolute access in the country which we wish to have. But water is a very, very important part of our life. Interestingly, if we look at the oil water cycle, the available water globally is below 1%. There is very little groundwater, less than 1%, some in the lake, some in the streams and rivers. But overall, we have a situation in which most of our water sits either on the ocean or the ice cap. I think now with climate change, some of the ice cap and the glacier are, you know, basically melting, which is not that good for us, but, you know, it doesn't make the resource more available. What we have is a world where water is unevenly distributed, not only geographically, but time-wise, and it goes through drought and flood cycles, which are actually getting worse and worse with climate change issues. So what are the global trends? This is not South Africa, this is not developing countries. There is issue of population growth, there is the Millennium Development growth, and I think if you actually think about it, if you need more people connected, you need more water. The impact of climate change from point of resource and demand, energy issues. There is a movement of people from villages into the urban area. Aging infrastructure is a problem worldwide. Emerging pollutants, as we develop, we have more pollutants. Globalization, the customer involvement, the customer having more say. Capacity building, globally, the workshop is aging and we need new skills. And we have emerging technology that needs to be absorbed. We have a world that's growing exponentially, especially developing countries, and you can see the exponential growth. It almost multiplies, you know, if we go into 2050. At the same time, if we look at where we are now, beginning of 21st century, we still have 1 billion people no access to safe drinking water, 2.4 billion. 40% of our population in the world lack adequate sanitation. 3.4 million, mainly kids, die each year from water-related disease. And about 13% of the world don't have enough food to feed themselves. And I'm saying that because food relates very much to water. In developing countries, we have a similar situation. Very intensified competition on water, population growth. We have an interesting thing that part of the world has rising income. As you go out of the developing into the emerging economy, the diet changes. The diet changes, there is more protein, more water. Industrial development happens, they fix water supply. Rural sector and peri-urban area are often neglected by government. Subsidization of food exports by the rich countries negatively affecting the developing country. No appropriate mitigation policy to address climate change. the minister talk a lot about, you know, the G8 and the G20 and, you know, approaches to it, which is actually changing, but we're talking about the poor countries, which is problematic. Key issues are water and land rights and equity. And this is a key issue in part of key issues in Africa and some of the countries. An implication of biofuel. You know, we talk about biofuel and it's so great and it's against climate change, but at the same time, ethanol production in Brazil created a tremendous amount of water quality problems from point of receiving water quality and upgrade. So we have to understand biofuel in the longer, in the bigger picture. We also have to understand if it's fuel for cows or fuel or food for people, because in some countries, maize has replaced, you know, the needs of the people. This I want to show you because it's closer to home, because you can see 2000 and 2050, and you can see the red getting redder as where we are in Southern Africa and in South Africa. That means that we are talking about water scarcity. We're also talking about a scenario in which currently, if we look at the world today, demands are outstripping already supply. We have environmental and ecological issues. We have issues very complicated about policy and institutional arrangement in water. And globally, the current approach is very much sectorial and therefore often fragmented. And financing is poor. Options are expensive. What we see in the future, and I hope we can combat it, we can fight it and get it right, is decreasing per capita availability of water, degrading water quality, increasing competition and conflict. So it goes urban versus agriculture, have versus have not, upstream versus downstream, national versus international, because often we share the same catchment, the same river, and increasing competition between the water user and the water environment. This is not my slide. This is a slide taken from one of the presentations in the International Water Association. So it's not South Africa. This is a global picture. So let's talk about rainfall. And you can see where South Africa is. The world average is 857 milliliters per annum. Look at Hawaii and look where we are. We are, in a way, not doing too good, but at the other end, we have a very, very good, often we sort of like, you know how to complain and say we are doing bad, but with the little water we have, 80% in 5 months, we're doing good. Look at the variation from area to area. Again, we have a country which is geographically unevenly distributed as for rainfall. So we have low rainfall, which is not distributed evenly, with very high evaporation. 8.6% only of rainfall is available as surface water, and groundwater resources are also limited. In many catchments, water demand exceeds supply. Water scarcity is compounded by pollution of surface and groundwater sometimes in some places. And we have very high total dissolved solids, and eutrophication is a problem in the country. 77% of our water available originates from surface water, 14 from return flow, and 9 from groundwater. From point of water quantity, the country needs storage, and I will not downestimate it or downgrade it. Storage saves this country. It's a very important element. We need to reduce loss because some users are not efficient enough, and we need to understand losses and combat it. We have to improve use. We have to recycle and reuse, and we have to look at new water from desalination technology. As desalination technology gets cheaper, and if we can use wave energy, it will become actually better and better for us. And I think the strategy for growth and development of the department is very important. And you keep on saying which belongs to which portfolio committee. But we need to plan across sectors. What is cross-cutting? It is a limited resource, but many government departments have to do with it. It is more than one sector that is implicated as for having or not having water. We need to plan for growth and population, and this is actually taken from the strategy for water for growth and development of the department, talking about 53 million by 2025, and about 10% of the population, 5.7 million needing further access to safe water. And we're talking about basic sanitation only covering 70%, so we will need more sanitation, we will need more water if we are talking about wet sanitation, not dry sanitation. And of course, climate change and energy issues need to be addressed. We have very good legislation. I think we are known worldwide for our legislation regarding water resources and water services. And Iman and others will talk about it, so I would not go further, you know, on that legislation, except to actually say that in our constitution, we talk about the right for water and the right for the environment for water, which is very unique. Let's talk about our rural area, because we're sitting with a rural population of about 20 million, and half of those people are unemployed and depend on actually subsistence agriculture, and they are vulnerable to food security. I'm talking about that because we will talk now about utilization of water in agriculture, and it's an important issue. So what do we need in order to manage water? And this is a really an holistic picture. We need to manage land use and water use. We need to manage how we utilize the resource, but we have to protect the resource at the same time. So basically, in every land use and water use, we have to ask ourselves, what quantity, what quality is acceptable? I've been in parliament in which farmer came and said to the minister, we have tap water, but we want to grow stuff, and we don't have irrigation system, it's not acceptable. I've been to areas where I, you know, go and teach people about washing hands and hygiene, and I said, if I have to go, you know, that many kilometers in order to collect water, I wouldn't wash my hands either. So accessibility is just as important as quantity and quality. And all this has to be done within the catchment. So when we talk globally, and I say we are doing quite a lot of good, and we understand many of the things, but what can cause water scarcity? Simply physical, the fact that the rain not fall evenly, geographically or in time. The whole issue of climate change, which is not all man-made, is one of them. Infrastructure. It's fundamental economic scarcity. If we don't have money, we have insufficient access to water or not the right, basically, access to water, and we don't have the right quality. Institutional is very, very important. I think we have to be proud on the institution we have today. But in many countries, when there is poor governance and the absence of constitutional rights, and the minister talked about the war and the need for reallocation of water, it's key, because we need to be just in our allocation of water. So we need to really see if water will make good to society, will develop our economy, will have people that are not sick because they have cholera, and water is part of our general environment, and we need to actually understand that the larger environment gets affected by water, and water can get affected by air pollution. So when I talk about water and society, basically in the context of our democratic practices, we need to understand social aspects and the dynamic of water in society and the role that water can actually play in our country in social transformation should never be underestimated. And we're sitting in a country where we have growing pressure on water resources, we have the climate change issue, we also have HIV/AIDS, which is not waterborne but water-related, and water quality and accessibility is major risk for HIV/AIDS. And the daily reality of living in poverty in certain households. If you talk about our economy, it's very much a dichotomy, because water is a social good, but water is also an economic good. So water cannot be not understood as having a value economically, but at the same time, people have the right to water, and we need to manage between the two. So we need to understand the role of water in economic development, but also understand very much, and the strategy of water program development talks a lot about it. Use of water as a catalyst to generate wealth, but you can actually use economic instruments to change people's behavior. For example, they can conserve water if you would put the right instrument. And understanding basically the whole, you know, complex system is key for sustainable growth. People get sick from water. People need water for life, but people can get sick. And basically, either from drinking it or from swimming in it. This is a major issue. So we need to really see that South Africa has an advanced guideline and it has very good framework for monitoring. But we need to improve further water quality. We need to police. We need to see that we have better sanitation and hygiene practices. We need to improve the knowledge of where the bacteria come, where the virus come, in order to block it. Support the development and utilization of methodologies that identify and quantify the pathogen, because then we can build better risk assessment and better management. And investigate the effect of environmental change. How does climate change affect health? Because those bugs are influenced by temperature. And lastly, the environment, and that's actually the link between, you know, the two components of the department is very important, because there is constantly things that are not water only, atmospheric, marine, terrestrial, aquatic, subterranean. They all link, it's all part of the hydrological cycle. So if water is saline and if water has toxic things, sediments will go down. Soil will get actually toxic. So we are talking about acid rain that affects water, you know, and this actually needs to be managed often. Biodiversity is another issue. You can't talk biodiversity without actually talking water within the larger environment. So it's very important we have best governance practice and best policies that actually manage that. I just have a few slides about water and land use that I want to give you. I'm going back to the slide that talks about land use and water use. Now, we all know that land use is from agriculture, mining, to actually human dwelling or human settlement, industrial, forest, and the nature, actually, the aquatic environment. But all land use, or almost all land use, will have a component of water use. Except that fisheries probably is a water use without a land use because it's an aquatic environment, but overall we actually have all those various uses of water. That's basically again taken from the from government, from the department information. We look at the various uses, and agriculture is the major use, followed by domestic and then urban and rural. You can see actually that mine don't take much of our water, but we'll talk a little bit about it. Now let's talk a little bit about agriculture. It's responsible only 4% of our GDP, but it links to agro industry, which is getting it to 20% of GDP. But it's key for our employment from point of employing the people, but and often those people have no other competency. It's very strong to food security. It's very strong to reduction of poverty. And we will talk about this very wide range, because it talks from commercial to emerging to subsistence farming. But look at it, I just gave you a glimpse of information. Do you know how much water goes into one slice of bread? We all been given bread in the morning here. 40 liters of water. So the agriculture takes a lot of water, but a hell of a lot of water goes into a piece of bread. If you put a piece of cheese on top of it, it will be 90 liters. So you think about what you eat if you eat a sandwich. Not to speak about having good diet of meat. 1 kilogram of meat is 15,500 liters of water. You can calculate what happens when you eat chocolate. That's really another story. So we need to really, really work very hard. And the WRC has invested a lot in what we call more crop fed rock. You can actually grow more with less water. And it's important to actually follow all kind of water, how to actually schedule irrigation, how to irrigate without water loss, how to manage the old canal system, how to manage drip irrigation is very important. In the last few years, we talked a lot about rainwater harvesting and infield rainwater harvesting, which actually increased crop production really sustainably. So basically, we have agriculture as a land use. It requires storage. It requires little and large storage. From point of environmental pollution, it's also a problematic use. Pesticides, fertilizer, and those are non-points. You can't actually treat it. Those are mainly runoff, and we need to understand how to combat that. So what are the key issues? We need better irrigation and water use efficiency. We need application of water management models. We need to understand rainwater harvesting and conservation. The link between agroforestry and woodland is very, very important. Fitness for use of water for agriculture. If water quality is very bad, from point of microbiological or toxicant or methane, you will actually have not for fish produce. Aquaculture and fishery is rural livelihood. Impact of land management on point and diffusion point in agriculture. Water use in cropping system and the whole notion of biofuel production and gender issues. Most of the subsistence farmers are women, and we need to understand and empower rural area from point of gender equity and poverty reduction. Domestic use. In here we actually utilize the water for drinking, but at the end of the day we create waste. If we're talking about wastewater, when we talk about sanitation, there are different options. And often people don't see the different options because what we actually see is sewage. But on the other end, a lot of research and a lot of technology say that dry sanitation can work. What we're doing to wet sanitation is that we are actually putting a hell of a lot of water and energy into a system. And I hope that one day we'll have a better world in which we don't contaminate in order to clean up the waste. Another complication in the oil use from point of view human settlement, and we spoke about it today, service delivery. That's where we are talking about local government. And there, legislation ends what we call ONM, from point of maintaining a level in which the infrastructure is actually working, is very, very important. And basically, if we don't have proper service delivery, we will have problems of health, and we will have problems of poverty that wouldn't come out. So it's very, very important for us to enforce and understand the whole notion of rural, urban, and peri-urban, because all three don't have the same solution. So what are the key issues? We have very progressive water legislation, but we need to overcome governance and institutional issues, especially at local level. We have to assess the asset and infrastructure management from point of rehabilitation, refurbishing, and enlargement, very, very important. Basic water and sanitation sustainability needs to be further addressed. Advanced sewage treatment includes all kinds of carbonates and nutrient removal. We need to see that we remove organic. We have to see that the operation and maintenance challenges are actually met. We have to see that we don't have infrastructure overload. We just heard about Mutata, and we need to address the skills shortage. Climate change aspect on water supply and treatment processes is important, and we also have to understand energy demand. There is a lot of talk, actually, a sewage where can produce enough energy to maintain itself, and we need to push for that. And through legislation, one can do it. And again, this is linking energy, the environment, and water, you know, to the same field. We need to see if we can create new water. We do reuse. We do a lot of reuse in the, not in the Cape area, mainly in our area, in Pretoria, you know, the old area where inland we don't really have any outlet to the sea. But we should actually see that the areas that are close to the sea stop actually producing fruit that goes to the sea, but actually reusing it in a way. So it's very important, and we need to manage water losses. For point of mining is a very, very small usage, 2.5%. The problem is actually not even when the mine is active. The problem is when we close the mine. So we have acid mine drainage. So what we really have is a high polluting sector that doesn't use much water in production, but creates a lot of problems after it closed down. Because what we have is, we have a water table that's actually being decanted all the time during the time of the mine operation that is filled up and water are both acidic and saline, and it creates big problems. Scientifically, what happens is basically that the water that are actually filled are reacting with the old bodies and create acid water. They also have a lot of toxicity in them. Treatment options are available. Technology is there. We can neutralize. We can use it for reverse osmosis. Moses, and Angelo, I think, in cooperation now with Gilson, I've been to that area, I thought it's amazing, the Marilani case, where they actually provide drinking potable water from those water is unbelievable. And it can be done, and it's possible. I was very happy that they even built a house from Gibson, you know, which is also very economical. So you can, through technology, utilize mine waste in such a way that will be actually producing for the good of everybody. But unfortunately, we don't see it everywhere. It's also a problem of ownership, because if the mine is not working and the mine is closed, this is basically something that we inherit environmentally. Industry is, again, a small user, not really much water going to industry. But industry actually takes into different policies, and sometimes they have a zero effluent altogether, but they can pollute, and we do have very good legislation that requires enforcement. So the quality of water that industry uses actually potable water. In some industries, even higher standard. If you talk about the food beverage industry, they need very high quality water. In some metal finishing, they also require very high standard. Effluent management is an issue, and I think Linda will talk a little bit more about it, but they have different policies into it, and most of them are linked globally with different global industries, and they understand what to do. But I think policing them is not a bad idea. So you see, from point of effluent management, they can either prevent, minimize, recover, treat, or discharge and dispose if they do that. So the key issue really is cleaner production, the notion of groundwater pollution that we have to stop, and in the mining sector is mainly the mine closure and the acid mine drainage. So challenges include historic problems which affect groundwater mainly, which is salinity and organic pollutants. So thank you for your attention. I hope it's been helpful. Thanks.
Thank you, Ken, and I also apologize for all those changes. And as you said, it won't happen again. I'm going to talk about the water linked ecosystem, which is actually a continuation of what Rivka has already touched on. The water linked ecosystem is defined as in-stream, riparian, and water table dependent. In other words, this is the ecosystem that is actually depending on that thrives in water and in rivers, that's in stream, and also on the riparian, on the edges or on the banks of the rivers and also of wetlands, and also the ecosystem that depends on water from underground. The water ecosystem in South Africa has got a boost in the sense that the National Water Act of 1998, which is number 36, particularly chapter 3, has actually pushed this support and supporting of the environmental issues or ecological issues up in the list of the priorities in terms of the water allocation. Because after human beings are allocated water, the second thing that is given water is the ecosystem or the environment. So we have actually recognized as a country that without taking care of our ecosystems or our own environment, we are actually selling our own advantages in terms of the goods and services that the environment can afford us or can give us. And in particular, rural people or poor people in rural areas, they depend on goods and services that come from the environment. So it is actually important that the ecosystem or the environment is actually taken care of.
I would like to talk about the two issues that actually have to work hand in glove in terms of aquatic ecosystems. That is the ecosystem themselves and also hydrology. So hydrology in particular, we are simply talking about the study of the movement, distribution, as well as the quality of water. And this actually addresses issues relating to the hydrological structure and water resources. And I've given actually a picture showing that hydrological cycle, where you see water being evaporated from the water bodies and then condensation takes place and then forms clouds and then comes down back to the land and then collects again to the rivers and some goes to underground. However, when we talk about ecosystems, we are talking about a community of the living things and also the non-living things. But what is actually important is that the living things and the non-living things in that particular geographical space or media, they work together, they've got that functional relationship so that they can be able to help, actually they become like a tool or they become like a natural infrastructure that helps actually to make sure that the goods and services that come from that. For example, one of the services that an ecosystem can provide is the purification of water. So when an ecosystem is healthy, it can actually purify water. For example, I can give an example of a wetland that is functioning well. When water passes through the wetland, that wetland works like a kidney, whereby pollutants and other stuff actually can be sucked up or taken out of the water, and the water becomes more cleaner. And if you take that water to a purification system or plant, you will end up spending less money to purify that water. And the person sitting in his house or her house actually will pay less money, I mean, as a bill or a water bill. So actually, this is a natural infrastructure. That's the message I would like to put forward. So water, of course, is the resource. However, an aquatic ecosystem is actually part of that particular resource. Actually, we can separate water and aquatic ecosystem. The two actually have to go hand in glove. As I told you, that the ecosystem actually helps in making sure that the water is renewed, and the water issues, the hydrological cycle, as well as other processes actually takes place. So a stable ecosystem, as an example, provides the needed resilience to cope with extreme events like floods and also like drought, and also can deal with certain kind of pollution. So this is really something that we really need, and we need in a situation where our ecosystem is not functioning well. And human factors, unfortunately, if we overuse and we pollute our freshwater systems or we destroy our ecosystems, actually will make us actually lose those benefits that ecosystem can provide. Aquatic ecosystem, their existence, as I mentioned, is actually basically rooted in the functional relationship between the hydrology and the ecosystem. And some of the things that actually provide, as I mentioned, the tool or the infrastructure that we can actually depend on, even the rural people can depend on. Another thing is that they provide a number of goods and services. For example, people can harvest food from these aquatic ecosystems. You can also get traditional medicines from the wetlands and other places. Some are really places where you can get recreation, and you can have water purification, as I've mentioned. However, there's a need, also in this country, but all over the world, people are struggling coming up with their payment of ecosystem services schemes. In other words, trying to make sure that the people who are taking care of our ecosystem, they are compensated for the job that they're doing in terms of taking care of that natural infrastructure, and probably that the people downstream that are supposed to compensate those people who are helping. So I would like now to deal with issues that are like global. There is a Millennium Ecosystem Assessment that has been done, and the following trends actually have been found or documented. That during the last part of the 20th century, the world ecosystem actually been found that it was actually degrading or was going down, probably mostly because of human intervention, and the ecosystem were actually utilized to drive growing demand for ecosystem. So people were harvesting more, they were abstracting more, and without maybe considering the welfare of the ecosystem, and as such, there was a decline of the aquatic ecosystem. Another trend was that there was an exponential increase in the demand for resources, food, water, and other services, and that also resulted in the damages of the ecosystem. But what is important is not that people must use the ecosystem, but we must balance the utilization, both the sustainable utilization, and also at the same time we should actually protect our ecosystem. So there must be some issues the governance issues must be actually put in place. So increasing the utilization of ecosystem services, if not well managed, that's where the governance issues come into play. We'll continue actually, the damage will continue for a long term until we actually put those governance issues and sustainable methods actually as a priority issue. So the ongoing integration of ecosystem and the services form a major roadblock for achieving the Millennium Development Goals. But in South Africa, has already been mentioned that we are actually we have already found some strides as far as that is concerned. But in other poor countries or other areas where people actually depend on the ecosystem environment, they have to take this issue actually very seriously. So we can use, I want to give you, actually later I'll also give an example of how we can use the ecosystem for our own benefit. So the opportunities that ecosystem can provide us, the ecosystem can also help us in dealing with the threat. So we can use ecosystem property as a management tool. As mentioned that it can use as a tool, or can also use as an infrastructure, so that we can be able to manage our freshwater resources. But again, we can use ecosystem to manage or to eliminate threats.
Mana, can you do that sitting down? Mana, can
dust it next to the bed. Okay. So we can also use the ecosystem to manage even catastrophic events like floods. So when the floods actually are coming down and land that has got trees and got all the plants and everything in place, the floods actually can be stopped or can really be reduced. So we can really use, and we can only use that to manage droughts as well. So this is actually a tool that we're supposed to appreciate. Technical controls and other mechanistic approaches, they're good, we can use them, but if we really disregard the ecosystem, we will find that we cannot really achieve the full potential or the full results that we are really anticipating. So always we must consider mixing the technical issues or mechanistic issues with the ecological knowledge that we really have. Ecosystems, as I mentioned, that they are supply of goods and services. I'll give an example here. If we allocate enough water of better quality to our environment or to our rivers, we'll be able to do several things. There is actually a research study that has already been, that has actually got results, and found that there are certain diseases and factors that can actually be prevented or controlled by making sure that our rivers have got enough water or we flood our rivers. So the dam management issues also come into place here, like malaria and bilharzia. And there are also issues relating to business in communities like reeds and basket. We can actually support those kind of business by making sure that our water resources or wetlands actually have got enough water to support those grass or those reeds that grow there so that people can continue producing reeds and baskets. Medicinal plants, there are medicinal plants that actually need water, and without water we can lose them. So it is important that we make sure that there is enough water, or we allocate water intentionally so that those water resources can still supply us with those goods and services, and also food. We can use ecosystems and or taking care of the ecosystem, even to control some pests. The black fly is one of them, and this fly actually is known that it can cause also blindness. But it has been found that if we flood or we allow our rivers and even our water to have enough water, we can be able to control these pests. So it just needs a flowing river. So another important thing that is actually important in this country and we are concerned about is the eutrophication of our reservoirs. So there's a study that shows that if we can actually look into the structure of our ecosystem, for example, we we have certain fish, especially the alien fish that are found in our reservoirs. If we can remove them, we can change the ecosystem structure. And by changing that, we are able to make sure that we reverse the lack of oxygen in our water. And by doing that, means we are making sure that those fish, the fish that are found in our reservoir that can eat the plants and the algae, are also preserved or they're there. Whereas if we let the predators, which are particularly the foreign fish or the alien fish, we allow the reservoir quality to have less of the herbivores or those fish that eat the plants, and at the end of the day, you have all these algae and other plants growing in our reservoirs, and we have all the other problems that actually support or that stimulate eutrophication. Another good example is found in the use of the pests of the plants, the weevil, for biological control. Most of reservoirs today, you may find that if you don't actually take care of them, you find that there are water hyacinths or the water weeds that grow there. And this weeds waste a lot of water. However, we also have a study that has also found that you can use these pests that can eat these plants. And combining with other methods, we can actually take care of these weeds and our water resources can be protected. And we still have water for all and forever. There is another technology of using diatoms. This one is actually in the process of being implemented. And the Department of Water and Environment has taken up this particular study, where we can use the ecosystem members or community members, which are called diatoms. These are used to monitor the water quality. So different diatoms have got different requirements as far as water quality is concerned. So therefore, if we sample the water and we find that there is this particular kind of diatom, or we already will know that this water quality is good or bad. So these are some of the instruments that we can use. As I've mentioned, I want to remind you that we can use the ecosystem as a tool and also the infrastructure. He actually part and parcel of using it as a tool, and actually maybe a less expensive tool. So I've mentioned previously also that we need to mix both the engineering or mechanistic approaches with the ecological or ecosystem friendly technologies as well. This is an example of the technology that actually the WRC funded. We have found that all the dams that were built some time ago, they were actually not ecological friendly. And the technology that was actually brought in, or that was advocated, was to build fish ladders, allowing the species that are downstream of the dam and the species that are upstream in the dam, so that they can be able to connect. So the fish can be able to move from the dam upstream and go down, and the fish that are down, they can also go upstream and go to the dam and also go to the other part of the river, which is actually good because it connects the whole river, which is actually very, very important. And the dams that are being built today, according to my understanding, that they are now considering these ecological issues or the importance of making sure that there is a connection, which is actually good. But for those that have been built before, there's a need that we rehabilitate them. Roles of grassland and wetlands. As I've already mentioned, grasslands and wetlands are also very important. But in particular, grasslands, they promote rainfall infiltration so that there mustn't be floods that we cannot really control. But together with wetlands, they reduce storm flows, they increase bed flows, they reduce erosion. And those are the services that if we try to use mechanistic or engineering technologies, actually it may be very expensive for us. So it's important that we invest in taking care of our own environment so that we can have these services or free services from the environment. Carbon sequestration is also very important. It also links to climate change. And the biodiversity is increased by having all those, by having grasslands and also wetlands. In conclusion, I would like to conclude that it's actually very important that we see our ecosystem as part of the tool, as part of the infrastructure, natural infrastructure, which is actually very important. And by having it and by taking care of it, really we can really get the full benefits in terms of goods and services from the environment. So we all have to protect that. Thank you very much.
Honorable members, I thought we'll finish this presentation and get questions and clarification, but only receive responses after lunch. But it seems we are still far from concluding this presentation. So I'll need your guidance as to whether to go for lunch and come back and continue with it or what. Because we are now almost 10:01. Doctor?
No, sir, I would suggest that we go for lunch and come back maybe 10 minutes before that and run it 10 minutes before lunch.
The view of all the members? Okay, we'll then. The lunch is at the new wing, second floor. So can we now break for lunch and come back at 2? Thanks.